So there are some moments in your life which you know you're always going to remember because they're of special significance to you personally. And there are some moments which you know you're always going to remember because it was a special date in history and you just happened to be there and remember. And then there are some where the two collide. And the story I'm going to tell today is one of those moments, which is why, despite having outsourced almost all my medium-term memory to my phone, I can remember exactly when it was. It was almost 4 years, almost exactly 4 years ago, and it was the 30th of September, 2011, and I was halfway up a set of scaffolding on my first day in New York City, watching a bunch of Occupy Wall Street protesters about to get their heads kicked in by the NYPD. And I stood there on this scaffolding, and at this point I should back up and tell you that I like to climb things. I'm sort of known for it, which is, you know, I have, when you're a really short person, you develop a lot of upper body strength, because, I don't know, maybe you know about this, even smaller microphone, but you know, you have to climb up things as a kid to get stuff, and sometimes you have rubbish little sisters who are taller than you and put things up on high shelves where you can't see them because they think it's funny. Anyway, you get a lot of upper body strength, you learn to climb things, and I had at this stage been reporting on protests and youth movements for a couple of years. It was how I got my start, and if you're a short person at a protest, you're really not going to see a lot unless you get up high. So I had developed a reputation for climbing lampposts, bus stops, tall friends, really anything that would hold me. And some people referred to me as a protest monkey, which I quite liked. And so anyway, I was hanging off this set of scaffolding, and I showed one of the other, a very tiny, although very eminent, American reporter who I just met, a young guy, how to climb up this scaffolding with me. And I was standing next to him, or rather kind of dangling next to him, and these kids were walking by underneath, and the police officers stopped them from marching on Wall Street, which is what they wanted to do. And everybody was very shocked and upset at this. And this was my first day in New York, and having... Excuse me, I've got a nose ring. Having just come from Britain, I was astonished that anybody thought that these kids were going to be allowed to march on Wall Street. I mean, you can't do that. Honestly, I mean, maybe there's not a law against it, but really, what did they expect? Come on, come on. And then they started to do something which was astonishing to me. At Occupy Wall Street, they made a lot of interesting hacks and community hacks, the first one of which was the human mic, because the powers that be decided that one way they were going to tamp down on this protest, which they couldn't legally move, really, was they were going to ban the use of sound amplification. So instead, all the people there decided to do a thing where they would, whoever was speaking would repeat, would shout a phrase, and then everybody would repeat it back to them, the human mic. And so they started, one person, and I cannot remember who it was, I wish I could, started chanting something, and everybody started chanting it back. And it was, Congress shall make no law. Congress shall make no law. Respecting the right of the people. Respecting the right of the people. And I was like, to the guy next to me, I said, what is that? And he said, it's the First Amendment. And I was like, wow. America is really into itself. which is true, right? I mean, it's not that Britain isn't a mad patriotic place, but we don't, like, sort of advertise it. That's one of the first differences you notice in a place like between, like, London and somewhere like Boston or New York, is that in London, you never, if you see anybody going around in one of those I Love London t-shirts, you know instantly that person's not from London, because you don't do that. In Boston, people wear the Boston hats who are actually from here. It astonishes me. It really does. I, you know, why would you advertise your feelings about about the place you grew up in? Yeah, it's nonsense to me. But anyway, this was when I started to realize that there was something very different. Not just about America's ideas of itself, but also its ideas of speech and its idealism around journalism. Because I stayed at Occupy Wall Street, having turned up there with no money and no plan, following that protest instinct to see, you know, maybe there's something really high I can climb in America. One of the first things that I realized is that there were a lot of other young journalists from around my age who'd come to get their start at Occupy Wall Street because we just knew something massive was happening. Something huge was occurring that would change the way we thought about activism, about storytelling, and about what the future could be. And this was entirely true. And one of the things we learned, as well as being idealists and young people and all that awesome, you know, stuff that they write songs and films about and then try to sell back to us, we were also young journalists trying to build a career. And we realized that out there at Occupy Wall Street, the story that we were seeing was not the story that was being reported by our newspapers. The story was different, and a lot of us weren't even working for newspapers. We were young bloggers or podcast hosts or freelancers, and suddenly we didn't have a team. Suddenly we weren't in a mainstream media club, even those of us who were technically stringing for the New York Times, and we realized that we had to learn techniques from activism, even though we weren't activists ourselves. And so we decided to do something. A bunch of us, about 10 to 15 of us, we decided to do something that we'd learned from watching the activists at Occupy Wall Street and me from watching people in London previously, which was we formed an affinity group. And an affinity group is very simple. It came out of the anarchist movement, and it's a bunch of people who decide we're going to an event or a protest, and we're all going to stick together, and we're going to agree beforehand what the parameters are. Can we get arrested? No. Anybody feel like getting arrested today? No. All right, then. So we'll probably run in that direction when it happens. And it's a way of organizing action fast and changing with a changing situation. And we realized that we needed a team, and we couldn't be either ethically or practically in a team with a bunch of activists. The most important reason for this is that if you're in a protest situation and the police come charging at you, the journalists are the only ones who are going to be running towards them. And it was a matter of direction. And this had been a problem for me before, trying to report on protests. And, you know, people would be pulling me back, and I'd be going, no, 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 I have to get this picture. I have to see what's happening, even if I get hit in the head. It's fine. So we formed our affinity group. And that affinity group kept going even as we saw Occupy Wall Street dismantled, even as many of us moved around the world, covering different events, and as our careers took us off in different directions, we realized that there was something changing, not just in politics, but in journalism, because a massive crisis of capitalism had run smack bang into a huge change in communications technology, and I'm sure any of you who work in technology and media can see the ripple of effects of that only growing. But what it meant for us is we completely had to revisit what it meant, who our team was, and what it meant to have a team. And for me, this is a journey I'm still on. The intervening 3 years were a kind of endless, frenetic, knackering journey of going around the world, going back and back to America, because this place fascinates me. It's so weird. Covering protest movements at home, going around Europe, and trying to figure out where my line was in between advocacy journalism, and activism. And that's a line that people argue about in different ways in different countries, which is something that fascinates me. In America, it is not done at all to be a member of a political party in some newspapers. I briefly had a job at a newspaper called The Morning Star in London, which has the distinction of being the oldest and only daily English language communist newspaper in the world, which was next to a chicken factory out on Fish Island in London. And we are the only British outlet, or we were the only British outlet, which covers Northern Ireland as part of the foreign desk. And which is one of the things that taught me that all journalism in its way is advocacy journalism. But it was a tiring time and an exhausting time. And I spent a lot of it looking frantically for that team and wondering where my affinity group was and who my team was going to be. And eventually, a friend passed me the number of the Nieman Foundation and I applied on the off chance. And I remember when James and Anne-Marie called me to ask me if I was really sure that this fellowship was for me, the last thing they asked me was, are you sure that you're a journalist and not an activist? Are you sure that this is the right thing for you? And I said, yes, I'm a journalist first, but mostly I just want a year where people aren't shouting at me for being insufficiently Marxist. And so I came to Boston, and in Boston I thought I would be entirely by myself in the, as I'm sure many of the Niemans know, you think you're going to be the only one who's quite like you in this gang of fellows from all over the world. And I thought, well, nobody's going to quite understand me and my position on journalism, and nobody's quite going to understand what it means to be together is changing. And what I experienced very quickly is that we became a new affinity group. We developed community in a different way. And I'm sorry if that sounds cheesy, and maybe America is getting to me. And really, like, this is the bit where tiny violins play, and I say that, yeah, we're all still in contact, and, you know, we love each other, and we're setting up programs outside our newspapers because we know that what journalism means and what storytelling means and what politics means is changing. And it doesn't matter who your team is, as long as you have one and you have that backing and that community and that support. It's been vital for me. I'm really, really happy to be staying around in Cambridge for a little bit. And a bit of me is always going to be a protest monkey and is always going to be climbing things to look at the way, to watch the crowd move. But I'm really happy that there are a lot of people now dangling beside me, even though it's precarious. And that's my story.